Welcome back to Very Dead, Very Sad. My name is Mr. G, or Ben.
I'm Miss Rich, or Peyton.
And this is season two, episode one. Probably a short season. We decided to skip the experiment this year. I've been kind of busy with some other things, and just kind of distracted with that, and haven't really gotten around to repeating the experiment. There's something I've been waiting to tell you about.
Oh, I'm excited to hear about it.
So my dad has he has difficulty recognizing people's faces sometimes.
Okay, like the actual clinical problem?
No, it's not the clinical one. It's like a light version of that, where like if he sees you in a different context than he's expecting, he might kind of walk past you.
Okay.
And it turns out I apparently have a very light version of that myself. So a few days ago, I texted you about one of our campus supervisors. And we'll call him M.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah. And do you remember what I asked you?
Yes, you asked me if I considered M to be a person that has long hair or not.
Right. And I asked you that because I realized that I had never seen M with long hair in the same room as M with a beanie. And these two campus supervisors have the same name, but it's...
I'm sorry, you thought that M was two different people?
Yeah, I thought M was two different people. I've known this person for like a year now, and interact with him fairly frequently.
Can I ask a follow-up question? Did you think that both of these people were named M?
Yeah. Yeah, I knew their name, and I thought it was just like, we had two campus supervisors... who had the same name.
Did you think that they were twins? Or?
No, I didn't even recognize them as having the same face. In my head, I was like, oh, there's M with the long hair, and then there's M with the beanie. And these are two different people.
I will say that M wears a beanie very often.
Yeah.
Like, that's a pretty
often
standard,
enough,
yeah.
I was like, anyway, I thought you would find that funny.
I do find that very funny.
I had not realized that was the same person.
I have had a similar experience, believe
really?
It or not.
Really? That surprises me.
Yes, in high school, I met a person, and they told me that they were a twin. And they did not specify whether or not they were an identical or fraternal twin.
Mm-hmm.
And they would always wear a hat and then like an overshirt in the mm-hmm. morning. So I would see them in the morning and I would say hi. And then later on in the afternoon, as the day grew warmer, they would take off the overshirt, take off the hat. And so I assumed that when I was seeing them without the hat and what was a different shirt,
uh-huh.
it was in fact the twin. And when I met the twin, who is in fact fraternal, I was very confused.
You say, I didn't realize you were a triplet.
Yes, pretty much. And we did have friends in our group who were triplets. So.
That's funny. That's funny. Yeah. Well, that makes me feel better because this is the kind of thing I would do. And
yeah.
it's not the kind of thing I would expect from you. So it makes me feel slightly more confident.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I will say I didn't think that they had the same name.
Well, can't win them all.
Well, that's a good story. I liked that.
Anyway, today we're going to be focusing... mostly on the newcomers. Peyton, what is a newcomer?
I'm so glad you asked because so many people struggle with this question. A newcomer is a student who has been in the United States for 3 or less years and English is something that they are learning as an additional language.
Mm,
yeah.
How fun.
So does this mean this is a No Se No Baño
episode?
This
would be a No Se No Baño episode.
Excellent.
Excellent. Well, given we're not doing the other type of episode...
That's true.
We're probably going to be a No Se No Baño.
That would make sense, yeah.
So I have recently been really fascinated with pronunciation.
That's understandable.
When you have people from the same region or who speak the same language, you get... frequently similar mispronunciations, right? The one that we've talked about before is the B versus V in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Is very much the same sound.
Yeah, lots of conversations about bowels when it should be about vowels. You know, we've run into that one before, but I have.
Too many vowel movements.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Another common one is in Spanish, you pronounce every letter pretty much phonetically. It's very consistent in that way. And so a lot of my kids struggle with the word because they're trying to pronounce every letter. When they see it written down, they say because.
Yeah, I also hear a lot of, and I'm sure you do too, when there's an E on the end of the word. So like for like live, they'll say like live.
Yeah, that's very
Wife
common.
becomes wife, yeah.
Yeah. Another interesting one is we have a new student, Sileba, who is from Vietnam, and Vietnam's a tonal language, and so you get completely new mispronunciations.
Yes.
And I actually, she ends up taking up kind of a lot of my time because I'm used to all of the Spanish mispronunciations, but I have to kind of relearn all of them. The most interesting one to me was she was trying to say the word BAND, and she said BAND,
Oh, interesting.
right? And there's, you know, there's this kind of political correctness about accents, where you don't want to say like, oh, you're saying that word wrong, but you do kind of have to hit a threshold sometimes where it's understandable, you know. And when someone is saying banged, a native English speaker isn't necessarily going to know what word you're trying to get across. And so that's been very interesting to me. Within that, you get certain associations with letters, right? So for example, in Spanish, the D is often pronounced as TH would be in English. The TH in Spanish is just pronounced like a T. And the letters have a very surprising strength to that association. Like, if I'm telling a kid, oh, it's pronounced because, not because, there's a certain unwillingness to diverge from the letters since you know how it's spelled.
Yes, I understand what you're saying.
And so I want to do a fun little thing with you.
Oh, okay, I'm excited.
Okay.
I get to play a game.
I get to play a game.
Okay, I'm
It's a
ready.
very simple game.
I'm ready to play.
Okay. I want you to picture in your head this word. C H R A I N. Okay. What image does that bring up? I'm thinking of a noun.
It brings up an image of a chain.
A chain.
Like
Yeah.
a chain link.
A chain link fence. Now, so that word was C H R A I N. That is not the word I was thinking of, right? But because this word really resembles the word chain.
Yes.
And so you have these associations that that's what it is. Do you have a second guess as to what word I might be thinking of?
Are you telling me that you have intentionally misspelled the word you're thinking of?
Just give me a second guess.
Okay, I'm imagining a bird. I'm
What?
imagining a crane.
A crane. Nope, that's not it either. I want you to pronounce this word now.
Okay, can you spell it back out to me, please?
Chrain. I can write it down for you if you like.
Oh, thank you. I would appreciate that.
Chrain.
I would pronounce that crane.
You would pronounce that crane?
I would.
Pronounce it like it's the other CH pronunciation.
Train? I get it.
Isn't
Very
that
funny.
interesting?
Yes. I don't know if this has come up with us before, but I have synesthesia. So when you're asking me to like picture
You never
something,
told me who had synesthesia?
yeah, I'm
How come you
picturing colors. I'm not, I have a, like the letter shape
I'm a
doesn't
little
occur to me
offended
as
you
much.
never told me you had
I'm sorry,
synesthesia.
it's never come
How has this
up.
never come
I
up?
don't know.
Oh, that's a whole other thing we have to explore
Yeah,
now.
I'm so sorry. I don't have it as strongly as some other people where they can like taste something when they like, I don't have it in that. It's like color and shape. Letter shape and number shape
I
association.
was gonna make such an interesting point, but then you can't just say you have synesthesia. That's so
I'm
interesting.
so sorry.
But yeah, so this word, when you pronounce it out loud, is train.
Yeah, you're right, it is.
Yeah, but because you have such a strong association with these letters being something else, it's very difficult to change your pronunciation mentally, even though this is exactly how we pronounce the word Train.
You're totally right.
And I just think that that's fascinating.
Yeah, I also think it's interesting that when presented with this word, which is clearly a CH, my instinct is to say it crane, like knowing mm-hmm. what ch.
I kind of typically... primed you with chain and or whatever, mm-hmm. and you took it a different direction. But yeah, so I just think that that's really interesting, is that there's just like a certain stuckness that we have when we're looking at these letters. And so that makes it difficult to communicate sounds, right?
Yes.
If I'm giving you something, and I need you to make a certain sound, that makes it difficult. And so we need to have another way to talk about sounds.
Yes.
We need to have another way which we can communicate, this is how you're making the sound, this is what this sound is, because letters just kind of don't cut the mustard.
Nope, not in English.
Not in English.
Oh, English.
But so I've been on this kind of like journey of like, how do I make sounds in my mouth? Right? Like mm-hmm. how does that happen? And the problem is that there doesn't seem to really be one set way. So notoriously, I've had a difficult time getting my Spanish speakers to say the sound
Oh, same.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And is really, it's a difficult sound for them. It's not in their native language. They don't relate to it. And so I said, okay, what is my mouth doing when I'm making the sound?
A fair question.
Right. And so the kind of traditional answer is that you kind of make a little bit of a frown and the sides of your mouth go down. And that's kind of what makes the sound. If you go from your O shape to just dropping the corner of your mouth, you'll kind of make an sound. The problem is that I'm too good at this.
You speak English fluently?
I speak English too fluently.
Yeah.
And for someone who speaks English really fluently, they don't have to make the traditional mouth shape.
Oh, interesting. I guess you're right. I've never thought of it, but you're right. Correct.
Yeah, like you can totally like change your mouth shape really drastically. Like I bet you could probably open your mouth pretty wide and still make that sound like Right.
Yeah.
Isn't this a great podcast?
Yeah. I think that's really interesting that you say that, because I have thought about that before in mm-hmm. when I'm trying to teach the difference between B and V.
Mm-hmm.
I tell them with V, you put your bottom lip underneath your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to do that to make the V sound.
You know? You
I
don't.
Can go V.
Yeah.
And my bottom lip is out of my mouth still.
Yeah. Yeah, entirely. And so I was really struggling with this because I wanted to find like just what it was that makes that sound. And finally I settled on just saying like, I just need to teach them one way of making the sound. It doesn't need, you know,
yes.
It doesn't need to be the perfect
thing. I agree with thing. That.
But it's just so interesting to me. Like you could probably like, I'm smiling really wide. Like, it's like the complete opposite mouth shape, but you can still make the sound.
Yes.
Because your brain is just so used to compensating, for different things that it knows how to do it.
I wonder if that's been studied, like the physiology of that.
I'm sure it has.
Hmm. If you are a doctor who has studied the physiology of this, please get back to us.
So my approach to this was make my own alphabet. This was how I was going to combine these two problems into one solution.
What do you mean? Like make new letters?
I'm going to make new letters, except they're not going to be letters because I don't want them associating these letters with anything else. Right? So I'm going to just make up my own shapes entirely.
Are they going to reflect mouth shape?
They're going to reflect different parts of what your mouth is doing.
Hmm.
So, for example, it's kind of like a four-part letter. I'm going to try and do this. So, the first, it's like a... You know, like Japanese writing, they have it like kind of stacked on top of each other. I think that's Japanese.
Kanji?
Maybe. Anyway, it's four symbols stacked on top of each other.
Okay.
Right? The first symbol represents how wide you open your mouth.
Okay.
Right? So you have a scale of 1, 2, or 3. 1 is your mouth is closed. 2 is your mouth is just a little bit open. And 3,
your mouth is very open on 3.
Your mouth is very open. But what's interesting is we only need 3 for English, but there are languages where you would open your mouth wider.
Okay, yeah.
We have mm-hmm. our Iranian student, I think we call her Libra? Libro?
Libro, yeah.
Yeah. we call her Libro, who speaks Persian. And in Persian, you have to open your mouth a lot wider to get some of those vowel sounds.
Yes, she has talked to us about that before. So, by the way, sidebar, I just want to let everybody know that we are using nicknames for our students to protect their identity.
Yes. If you're one of our students, you probably know who you are. But but yeah, so in English, we only go up to 3, but probably in Persian, you have to go up to 4 or even 5. When I'm trying to imitate the sounds that she's making, I find I have to open my mouth really wide.
Yes.
Like, ah, like you really got to go for it. Yeah.
Which obviously we won't, but...
We can't, but...
That's one of the words that she's taught us that requires that larger mouth size.
Yeah. So on top, you have how wide your mouth is, 1, 2, or 3.
Mm-hmm.
Next, you have your lip shape. And this is like your lips are relaxed, you're smiling, you're frowning. You have your lips kind of open in a big O, smaller and like a tight, more like kind of whistle size, lips together like in an M, all of that. Next you have the tongue, the tongue is doing.
Yes.
And then again, there's a lot of different options for this. Maybe the tongue is relaxed, maybe the tongue is between the teeth, maybe the tongue is curled up on this.
On the roof of the mouth.
On the roof of the mouth, exactly. And then finally, we have what I call, like, the what the throat's doing.
Okay.
And this is, I didn't really have a better word for it, but, like, you're either, generally, you're blowing air, you're vocalizing, like, or you're what I call, like, putting the voice into your mouth, where you're kind of, it's a little bit difficult to explain, but... It's like you're being more, you're dragging that sound up into the top of your mouth more, and you're putting more force and focus into your mouth than in your throat.
Like a guttural type of sound?
Kind of the opposite.
Okay.
If you notice your mouth shape on like a J. Like if you make the J sound.
J.
Right. That, most of that energy, if you try and just use your throat, like... Like it's that you need kind of some more force and air flowing through.
You're right.
You know, there needs to be more force and air flowing through that area. So it's very similar to just your normal vocalization, but you need to really kind of put some power through it.
I understand now. That's an example.
And so these are the four kind of options here. Is you have mouth size, lip shape, what your tongue's doing, and whatever's happening in your throat.
Okay.
And so this was my idea. Was we're going to communicate what's happening in our mouths. And this is something that I've really wanted to do for a while because I can't see what they're doing.
Yes.
I can't see what they're doing, and it's frustrating to me because we don't have a way to talk about it. So I kind of made this up. And then I got to do all that fun stuff that I did just now, trying to explain things with my tongue and doing my teeth and all that.
I enjoyed it. It was fun.
Yeah.
So are you applying this to individual letter sounds, to blends,
to sounds?
To sounds, okay.
So I guess that would be like a phoneme, maybe? Phoneme? Phonic? Yeah. An individual sound. So right. this whole four stack applies to
Right.
Right. And sometimes you need movement in that, like with a B. You need to indicate that your lips are opening.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, it's kind of like one sound. What I thought would happen is that we would all basically be making the same shapes with our mouths.
Once instructed?
No, just like the way I say like eh and the way you say eh, I figured would be the same.
Okay, yes, that's an understandable assumption.
Not even close. It's not even a little bit close.
Are you noticing similarities amongst language family speakers? Like all the kids that speak Spanish, are they having the same shape?
So, no.
Oh, okay.
But there is a really interesting thing that did happen along those lines.
Mm.
So, by and large, everyone's totally unique. And I mean, like, the way Floor pronounces, like, the eh sound is she has her tongue up a little bit in her mouth. And it's just, like, that's not what most people do. That's just the one that stood out. I'm going to get to another example in a second. But people just use completely different sounds, completely different mouth shapes for the same sounds. And so one of the activities we did here is we had them write a word and then kind of transcribe it into this format. And then other people would try and guess what the word was.
Oh.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So I
had... That sounds like fun.
It was fun. So I have in my class one Hindi student, one Russian student, and then the rest are all native Spanish speakers.
Yes.
Right? There was two girls, Luz and Adelante,
mm-hmm.
who were really just nailing this every time.
Oh, heck yes.
They could just really read anything everyone was saying, except when we got to the Hindi student.
Oh.
So even though that this is totally phonetic, and even though everyone's making different descriptors of how their mouth shapes are moving, the Hindi student threw them off. Yeah.
Not the Russian student.
I don't think he participated that time, to be honest with you. and it was specifically the way that the Hindi student made her F. Her name's Alentro, yeah?
Alentro, yes.
Yeah. Is she makes her F by basically whistling and blowing, like that small...
Got it.
Right. Instead of maybe biting your bottom lip, she blows. And that really threw them off. They weren't ready for that.
Ooh, interesting.
And so that was really interesting. The other thing that was really interesting is that people have patterns with how they use these. And the patterns are really distinct. So, like, for example, me, I curl my tongue up on the side of my mouth very frequently when I'm talking. And so if I'm saying, eh...
You can't see, but he's got his tongue.
I'm almost always having my tongue curled up on the side when I'm speaking.
Is this something you noticed before you started doing this activity about yourself?
Well, in the sense that I thought everyone was doing it.
Oh, okay.
You know,
mm-hmm.
When I was searching, like, how do I make this sound naturally? I was like, oh, obviously this is what everyone's doing, but it's not.
Yeah.
So one of the, there was, the, these patterns are so distinct that I got one of these papers handed to me without a name on it, and I was able to immediately identify whose it was based on the patterns that they most preferred.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
So they are, I just want to be really clear, they are transcribing these sounds differently.
Right. Yeah, exactly. They're transcribing the sounds differently.
This is fascinating.
Based on what their mouth is doing, and people have patterns and preferences.
That's so interesting.
Now, I have an unscripted, so maybe very dangerous question in terms of getting an interesting point across.
Oh, okay.
But I have an unscripted...
I'll do my best.
I have an unscripted question for you. How would you describe Adelante's disposition? Would you say that she's generally happy, generally somber, generally sad, kind of... excited? Like, how would you describe her disposition?
I would describe Adelante as generally being pretty even-keeled.
Even-keeled?
That's sort of how we arrived on the nickname of Adelante, which mm-hmm. is like, go along. Mm-hmm. She encounters challenges and she kind of just goes along. I've definitely seen her sad, I've seen her happy, I've seen her excited, but I mm-hmm. think in general, she's a pretty, like, go-through-it kind of a person.
Okay.
Yeah.
I perceived her as being a little bit somber.
Interesting.
Yeah. And what's interesting about that is she frequently frowns when she speaks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that's where I was going. I was curious if you would say that, because I needed kind of a double blind on that.
I certainly don't think of her as a high energy, like,
sure.
up there kind of a person.
But I thought that was interesting, because I perceive her as a little bit somber.
That's funny.
And so when I noticed that she was frowning a lot, I was like, I wonder if there's something to that. Lastly, on this subject, we have the word class.
Okay.
I was working through this activity with Floor. And she was getting it, but we were working through it together. And I asked her, she was doing the word class. And the C and the L sound, I was like totally copacetic with.
Yes.
And then I said, okay, how do you make the A sound? How do you make that mm-hmm. A in class? And so she said she had her mouth at two.
Okay.
Because she's a little bit shy. She doesn't like to open her mouth very much.
What part of the word are we talking about?
The A.
The A. Okay.
She said her lips were relaxed.
Okay.
Which I guess would be this symbol right here. She said she was vocalizing, just basic vocalizing.
Mm-hmm.
And she said her tongue was back.
That's the part that throws me off.
That's the part that throws me off. Back. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that... that's where her accent comes from.
Oh.
She says Kloss.
Yes, you're right.
Have you heard her say that?
Mm-hmm.
Kloss.
Kloss. Yeah, that does happen that way.
Yeah. And I found that so fascinating. And I said, okay, try relaxing your tongue now. Like, don't put it back. Like, just mm-hmm. relax it. And she said it without an accent. And it was just... It was the most fascinating thing to me.
This is so interesting.
Yeah.
This is wild.
Yeah. That's all I have prepared. but yeah, I was just like, I actually took the paper that she was working on and I like put it up on my wall because I just thought it was so interesting.
That's really fascinating to me. That I love that you're getting completely different approaches to it, mm-hmm. but it's still working and serving its purpose.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and I think that that's really fascinating.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see where you'll have to keep us updated on how that goes.
Okay. Yeah. No. I will. All right. I'm done.
Okay.
I washed my hands of this.
Oh my goodness. It's your dramatic.
Okay. What are you doing in class?
So what I have been trying to do in my class, just for context for everyone out there, I work with the people who have less proficiency in English. So I typically have people who have been in the U.S. for less than a year and the brand new arrivals. And Mr. G over here typically has the students who have been here for more than a year, less than 3 years, who have a little bit more English.
Mm-hmm. Or just come in already knowing a fair bit of English.
Yeah, exactly. So I have been working on, as we approach the end of the school year, I had been wanting students to produce more English in conversation. So their writing has been pretty good and their reading has been pretty good, but I have been wanting them to do more production. And it's really difficult when you have a room of 16 students and they're all basically at various different levels of English proficiency. Categorically, when we break them up into the three groups of our three classes, they all are in the right class.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of variance within that. So I have been wanting to have one-on-one conversations, mini interviews. What did you call them earlier today?
Minterviews?
Minterviews, yes. Little minterviews with them. And so I have been implementing stations, and I would like to take a moment to shout out my two fantastic peer tutors, who we call Encargada and Sabe Todo, who are absolutely fantastic. And they each run a small activity station. And then there's a station where students are on their computer. And then there's a station where there's just one student with me mm-hmm. having a little minterview. And we talk for about 5 to 8 minutes. And I try to have one interview with a student at the beginning of the week and one at the end of the week. So I try to have two interviews with each student every week. I have 15 students. So, you know, like 5 minutes with each student is like, what, 80 mm-hmm. minutes or something like
that?
It's a bit,
yeah.
So, there isn't enough time in our day to allow me to have longer conversations. Sure. That'd be really nice. But I've really, really been enjoying having this time. And I think that it's been really beneficial to have these one-on-one little interviews. Yeah.
I'm curious about this part. You keep calling them interviews or minterviews, as you so decide. Is it formatted as an interview type of process? Because I know with your kids... You might need to give them kind of more directed questions, which you think they might have the vocabulary to address. So is this like are you asking them things that you kind of know they have vocabulary on? Or are you trying to just like have a conversation, see where it goes? What's the format of this?
Oh, this is a very good question. So it definitely starts out with more of an interview situation where I am providing the questions. And then as we've gone on, I have been trying to like release that and encourage them to add on to the conversation. There is a topic with every with every interview that we go into, and we start each little session with me telling them what our topic of the day is. And it is related to whatever group of vocabulary words we are working on at that time. So last week's, for example, was Easter was our topic. and mm. Passover. We did a yes, Easter. We did an Easter Passover. Shut that out. Yeah. we did an Easter Passover thing, which was quite fun.
We'll get back to that in a second. Yeah.
And so the conversation was like, do you celebrate Easter? Mm. How is Easter different in your home country? Sure. And those kinds of things. And so there's always like a topic mm-hmm. that we are addressing that's related okay. to our vocabulary unit of the time.
So how do you choose those topics? Because this is something that I really struggle with and something that I think you're really good at.
Well, thank you.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. is because something I really kind of fear as a teacher of English is that I'm teaching them, I guess, too academic English. Mm. When I look at my Spanish abilities with the intermediate class, all of that is limited to things that happen in the classroom.
Yes.
I would say I'm very middle of the road to low Spanish proficiency at managing a classroom. But if you took me onto like a soccer field or the beach, like I can tell you a beach is called the playa, but like I don't know what the sand is called. I don't even know if I know the word for ocean. Like all of my vocabulary is limited to what I use frequently.
Yes.
And so how do you try to ensure that there's such a variety? Because I find when I get your kids, they often do have these kind of like varied words that I just wouldn't think to give them.
Oh, well, thank you. So part of it is we do have a workbook mm-hmm. that the newcomer class has, and that is broken up into vocabulary units, right? Mm-hmm. So like the first one is like introducing yourself.
Sure.
And then the second one is like your family. So I use that, and then I supplement with other groups of vocabulary words that I think will be interesting and have like day-to-day applicability. So for example, one of the like vocabulary units that we do that's not in the workbook is animals.
Sure.
Right, because that's fun and interesting and it's animals? Relevant and animals come up a lot. Another one that comes up that is surprisingly not a unit in our vocabulary book is rooms in a house and things in a house.
Surprising. Yeah.
So some of it is I follow the workbook that we have, kind of mm-hmm. what's going with that. Some of it is supplemented with what I think they'll mm-hmm. be interesting. Like I have one on sports.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of it is, interestingly enough, the necessity of when I encounter a group of vocabulary words in Spanish that I don't have the language for, and I realize that I don't have the language for it in Spanish, and they don't have the language for it sure. in English, so maybe let's...
Do a unit on the beach.
Maybe let's do a unit on the beach, for example, or whatever the case may be. So that's how I come up with them.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fun.
It is a good time.
That's fun.
So yeah, we have a little topic.
Yeah.
And this last week, we actually did I said it was a game that we were playing, and the game was the question game. And this is my beginning of trying to encourage them to do more of the conversational work.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's not just me the whole time. So the game
They can't
was,
escape with yes, no, no, say.
Mm-hmm. where I asked them a question, and they had to answer in English, and then they had to ask me a question in English.
Oh, devastating.
I know, terrible. and we went back and forth for a couple minutes. And that was really fun, too, because it was the first time I have explicitly put them on the spot and mm-hmm. put, like, half of the conversation
yeah.
on them. There have been times where, like, we're talking about Easter, for example, last week, and mm-hmm. I asked them about Easter with their family, and then they talked about that, and then they would wait, and I asked a lot of them to be like, now is a good time to ask the other person about Easter in their family. And so, but this is the first time I've been like, half this conversation is your responsibility.
How much do you think that personality weighs into the willingness to try in these kinds of things? Because you have what is ostensibly like a very academic kind of activity, you know, where you might expect the kids who are most studious to be the most participatory, you know, the kids who most want the A. But also it's a very social activity, and you might expect the kids who are the most social to be more willing to take this kind of risk. Do you find that one of those two factors is stronger than the other? There's like a third factor altogether which weighs in.
This is a very interesting question. And I was thinking about this the other day and how I'm going to handle this. The more social student, the more comfortable the student is with me, the more comfortable they are attempting English in this situation. Mm-hmm. So we have a student, Vagabondo, mm-hmm. who has very low English skills. Mm-hmm. And I say that with love in my heart for him. But he is very comfortable with me. He's mm-hmm. known me for almost 2.5 years now. We have mm-hmm. a very good rapport with one another as teacher and student. And so he is one of the most willing to try mm-hmm. it out. And he mm-hmm. doesn't, I mean, oftentimes he'll have to help me translate him
sure.
for him. But he is the most willing to try it out. And then we get the students who have the most English and are very academic. Mm-hmm. They sometimes get caught up in worrying about how grammatically correct they're going to be, or coming up with something to say that they know they can say correctly in English, and they get a little bit hung up on that. So sure. I think that actually the more academically inclined students struggle with this a little bit.
Wow, uh-huh. I didn't expect that.
And I find myself being like, it's okay, like we all mm-hmm. make mistakes. Like, you hear me make mistakes in Spanish all the time, and you don't yeah. get upset with me about it. Like, it's gonna be totally fine. We'll work on it together. And I have to...
That's so interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I have something similar, but it's not the same, because I have them write it down first, and they'll sometimes use a translator, so they're a little bit more confident. So I can just put everyone on the spot. But you're doing something mm-hmm. much more kind of extemporaneous.
Yes, for sure.
Which can be much, much riskier in a sense.
Yeah. And I do think that I do have a good enough rapport with all of them that they will try it, but there mm-hmm. is more hesitancy with the really academic, high-achieving people in that class.
Do you struggle getting, the new kid on the block to engage with this? Although you haven't had, like, a super new kid in a while. Since Christmas, I think.
We have a new student.
We do? Oh, yes. Gosh, what's her name?
Antiojos.
Antiojos, okay.
We have a new student, Antiojos. Oh, no, I guess you're right. I guess we do have a newer student, but they are frequently absent.
Oh.
Yeah, we don't have a nickname for that student yet. So I'm thinking about, like, my newest kid on the block has probably been here for about 2 months. Mm. Sure. And it does, they are a little bit more hesitant, for sure, mm-hmm. because they just met me, and it's mm-hmm. all kind of brand new. I do think this is one of those scenarios in which having the group and the strong community really benefits, yeah. because they come into this environment, and I think that they see that everyone in the environment is pretty trusting of one another and trusting of me, and I think that lends me a lot of credence. Perhaps sure. I don't deserve it, but I think that they're pretty immediately comforted by the fact that everyone around them seems pretty comfortable with mm-hmm. me. I don't seem, I think, as imposing as perhaps other, like, English speaking adults that they encounter. Sure. So, sure. But yeah, it's definitely a little bit more stressful for the people that just got here.
Did you have more to say on this, or did you want to go to Passover?
Oh, no, we should talk about Passover.
We should talk about Passover.
Yeah, so we recently... Well, I guess we should start with the fact that you are Jewish.
I'm Jewish, spoiler alert.
Mm-hmm. And so you...
So we...
I'm gonna let you take this away. Okay, I'm not going to explain it to you.
So as Peyton had mentioned, we were doing a kind of Passover, Easter crossover episode.
Mm-hmm.
And Passover is my favorite holiday in Judaism. And one of the things that you do on that holiday is basically like a meal with some fun stuff in the middle. But one of the things you do is you eat this thing called horseradish, which is a bitter herb.
It is very bitter.
It is a bitter herb. Mm-hmm. It does not taste good. If you've ever had horseradish, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't had horseradish, just imagine a bitter herb. I got nothing else for you.
Yeah, very bitter. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people have compared it to, like, wasabi.
Yeah, it's similar-ish. I think wasabi is maybe more spicy, but it's very, very strong. And we had, what's his name? Tonto.
This is my favorite part of this adventure.
So we had the kids try it. So we had them try the Passover sandwich, is what it's called, which is the matzah, the horosi, and the horseradish. And Tonto tried the horseradish, and he said, is this what the Germans gave the Jews?
It's so terrible. I shouldn't laugh, but it was just such a genuine.
It was
such a genuinely naive question.
Yeah.
Like he wasn't saying this out of any kind of malice or like out of any kind of attempt to like lighten the Holocaust or systematic oppression of Jewish people. It was just literally a genuine thought that he like, this is so awful. This could only be a Nazi torture technique.
Right, right.
Is what he was thinking.
I said, no, Tonto, this is a voluntary endeavor.
Actually, what you said is, you'd think that, wouldn't you? That's what you said when he said that.
Did I say that?
Yes, you did. That is exactly what you said.
I said, you know, no, it's not. And then later in that class, he comes up to me again, and he, like, clarifies. He's like, no, I mean, like, the concentration camps.
What did you say to him at that time?
I said, no, it's still, you know, it's still not what it is. But yeah, it actually, yeah. It was not all sunshine. Some kids really didn't like it.
Yeah. What I love about this is you did explain before we ate everything about the history of Passover and why certain things are eaten. And you talked about every single food.
Yeah.
So even with that knowledge, Tonto felt it was so bad that perhaps you must have left that detail out. That was what he was thinking.
Yeah. We also brought them challah, which is not strictly speaking a Passover food, but we figured they wouldn't know the difference.
They didn't.
And after they'd eaten the horseradish, there was a couple people who were a little bit distrustful of the challah.
Yeah.
They said, I don't want the Jewish food anymore.
We had a particularly difficult incident in which a student had a very bad reaction to horseradish. I'm not sure if she was allergic.
I don't think she was. I don't even think she tried it. I think she just, like, the jar was open and she took, like, a really big sniff of it. And it was just, like, really, I think that's what she said. She didn't actually eat it. Because I've never seen someone have, like, I haven't heard of someone having an allergic reaction to horseradish. Maybe how would you know the difference?
Yeah, it's a very, she had a very violent response. And was kind of, like, throwing up and was gagging and unable to breathe. It was genuine.
I think she actually ate anything. That's wild. What I was told. She just smelled it. It's a very strong smell.
And this was a completely genuine reaction. I mean, we would be the first to say that teens are overdramatic sometimes. Yeah. But this was just completely genuine. And so that happens, and Ben, you take the student to the nurse. You're trying to kind of figure it out. And so I decide I'm going to try to pass out Peeps. And I couldn't, like, it took me a minute to convince them that the Peeps were safe to eat. They were very concerned. So it wasn't just the challah. It was, like, anything after that.
Yeah. Oh, man. Anyway.
That was very fun, though. I enjoyed that cultural melting pot experience.
It was a real cultural melting pot.
Yeah, Easter is very different in a lot of their home countries, despite the fact that the majority of them come from home countries in which Catholicism is very prevalent, and therefore Easter is a holiday in a lot of their countries. It's celebrated very differently than in the United States, so that's always interesting.
In what way is it different? They have two Easter bunnies instead of one?
So, the first time I ever taught newcomers, the first year, and I was kind of talking to them about Easter, you know, Easter vocabulary. I would like to take a moment to sidebar, disclaim that I am not, in fact, Christian or Catholic or of any of those traditional religious practices. I just grew up in an American culture. And so that part of Easter is obviously an integral part of the holiday, but not part of the holiday that was ever part of my family's experience of the holiday, I guess. But I was talking to them about Easter, and they were like, we hate Easter. I was like, oh, why? Like, not enough chocolate? Like, and a lot of them talked about how in their home countries, primarily Mexico, but some other home countries, there is often a reenactment of the crucifixion of Christ as part of Easter. And one particular group of students who are from the same region, we're talking about how in their pueblos, men, like young men, would get into fist fights, very heated arguments about who would get to play Jesus, and
get crucified.
And get crucified.
Would they actually like do the like crucifixion part?
So that part was pretend, but there were several students who said that in their pueblos, the person was actually whipped.
Oh my gosh.
Like once, but still. And then, you know, and then like women would follow the like, and the dude would carry the like the giant wooden cross, and he would pretend to be in pain while being crucified. And they're telling me about this, and it's really difficult to follow that because
yeah,
they say that, and then they're like, you don't do that? What do? And my follow-up is, well, there's some chocolate eggs.
Yeah, I can see how that might feel a little bit different.
There's a bunny. So I do think, obviously, in parts of Latin America that Easter is celebrated with the Easter bunny and chocolate eggs, but there's very different traditions. Yeah, so that was our Easter Passover experience. Yeah,
that was fun.
Well, it's lovely to do this again with you.
Yeah, no, this was fun. We should do this again sometime.
I think we should, yeah. Okay. All right, well, vaya con Dios.
And permanezca con Dios.